Hello, I'm Bruce Edwards, and welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this week's episode, Laszlo Varro on moving away from fossil fuels.
So there are employment impacts, but I mean, in the past 12 months here in the United States, the retail industry lost more jobs to Amazon than the job losses in the coal industry in the past 5 years combined.
80% of the world's energy consumption is based on fossil fuels, which account for most of the greenhouse gas emissions that are warming the planet. Climate change is affecting the economies of the world and has become a defining feature in energy policy making. Laszlo Varro is the chief economist for the International Energy Agency and was invited recently to speak at the IMF. Varro says while the current targets under the Paris Agreement to reduce carbon emissions are off track, technological progress and investment momentum in the clean energy sector is moving in the right direction.
So given that the world economy has been so dependent on the availability of affordable energy, how reasonable is it, do you think, in a decade or so to be able to shift this demand for fossil fuels to something more environmentally sustainable without disrupting the global economy?
This shift has already started. So the world has experienced in the past 3 years, 3 years of stagnating carbon dioxide emissions with a relatively healthy global economic growth. This has never happened before. For the past 100 years, periods of stagnating or declining global carbon dioxide emissions were associated with very challenging macroeconomic environments like the 2008-2009 financial crisis or the early 1990s of the post-communist collapse of the Eastern European and the Russian economy. So the notion of having a quite broad-based GDP growth in all the major regions of the global economy with stagnating carbon dioxide emissions, this is very, very new. Our analysis shows that this is attributable to three factors. In the order of importance, the first is the declining energy intensity of the Chinese economy. So as the Chinese economy is rebalancing away from heavy investment and construction-related activities towards the service sector and higher value-added manufacturing, this has profound macroeconomic implications, but it also has profound energy implications. And of course, the energy implication is that for construction, you need steel, cement, plastics, glass, aluminium, which are extremely energy intensive to produce. So this rebalancing of the Chinese economy is very positive from an environmental energy point of view. The second very powerful factor is rapid large-scale investments into renewable energy, especially wind and solar power. If I add together the windmills, solar panels that are deployed all across the world, under normal weather conditions, they generate roughly 250 terawatt hours electricity, which is like a medium-sized European country. Whereas currently wind and solar power represents only around 5% of the current production of electricity globally, they represent more than half of the growth of electricity production globally. And the third factor, which also worth mentioning, is a quite large-scale shift from using coal to using gas. Gas has a lower carbon intensity than coal. So when economies shift from using coal to using gas, this is a very powerful structural shift ongoing in the United States, but to a lesser degree also in China, that also has an impact of reducing carbon dioxide emissions.
So some of the biggest users of these fossil fuels are power plants owned by governments, state-run companies. Is it harder to make the case for clean energy at a time when government revenues are down and debt is rising?
Certainly, electricity is a very state-heavy industry. Mm-hmm. So there's a very large-scale state ownership in the electricity sector in practically every emerging economy. But even in Western Europe, there is a fair degree of state ownership in the electricity sector. And even when the sector is not state-owned, it is heavily regulated. So only 3% of power generation investment is market-based. So governments certainly play a very, very important role. Now, but we also see, on the other hand, that some of the electricity systems where governments play a very important role are moving towards renewable energy in a very determined fashion.
Is there a large investment involved in this? Do they have to invest a lot of money to
Most of the actual investment is coming from the private sector, or in the case of China, the corporate sector. So the role of governments is not direct budgetary outlays. The role of governments is providing the regulatory conditions, and most importantly, price regulation.
That's very interesting. So what does a move away from fossil fuels look like? I mean, what needs to get done first?
Yeah, so today, the overwhelming majority of clean energy investment is in the electricity sector. Now, electricity represents around 25% of the global energy system, but it absorbs more than 90% of the global renewable investment. So the progress is highly asymmetrical. The progress is much, much faster in the electricity sector than in other parts of the energy system. So with a bit of a simplification, we have to do three things. One is that you have to continue pushing renewables and in some countries also nuclear power, low-carbon energy sources into the electricity system. Now, given that wind and solar are variable production, so you have wind or you don't have wind, the sun goes down, the sun goes up, there are some non-trivial technical challenges associated with integrating these resources into the power system. Now, this can be solved. There are technological solutions for this, but countries will have to rethink their electricity regulation in a quite comprehensive fashion. So you progress with electricity. Then the second thing to do is that to the extent possible, you take that low-carbon electricity and you bring it to the other sectors of the economy and you use electricity instead of fossil fuels. So, for example, instead of heating buildings with gas boilers, you heat the buildings with electric heat pumps where you produce the electricity with wind power. Instead of using internal combustion engines, you use electric cars and you produce the electricity with solar power and so on. So to the extent you possible, you push the electricity into the other sectors. And in some cases, this is not possible. So with the current state of technology, we don't think it would be possible to build an electric aircraft. For the other sectors where it is not possible, then you develop some other technological solutions which would enable you to replace fossil fuels. And we don't see these three strategies as alternatives. We see these three strategies as something that you have to execute simultaneously in order to get to a low-carbon energy system.
So there's also a political level to this debate. I mean, in this political climate, we hear more people blaming clean energy policies on the loss of jobs. So as the chief economist for the International Energy Agency, how would you respond to that claim?
Well, first of all, energy is a very capital-intensive industry. For most energy technologies, the capital to labor ratio is very heavily biased towards capital. So there are employment impacts, but I mean, in the past 12 months here in the United States, the retail industry lost more jobs to Amazon than the job losses in the coal industry in the past 5 years combined. Of course, retail is a very labor-intensive industry. Far more people work in department stores than in coal mines. So in general, technological changes have a non-trivial impact on employment. I mean, I think it is an absolutely legitimate public policy concern of how technological changes affect employment. But we don't think that energy is the largest part of this. Some part of the clean energy transition are quite labor intensive. So, for example, we don't think that it's possible to robotize the work of climbing to the rooftops and installing solar panels. You need carpenters climbing to the rooftop and installing solar panels. or improving the energy efficiency of buildings. That is done by plumbers, that is done by stonemasons. The type of working class jobs whose disappearance is a quite legitimate political concern in many countries. It is absolutely true that in countries which are large fossil fuel producers, including the United States, the oil and gas industry, coal-fired power plants, coal mines are a significant source of employment. So on the other hand, a very considerable proportion of the total employment impact is producing the equipment which is necessary for it. So for a typical American shale project, around 20% of the people who work on the site are the employees of the oil company itself, and 80% of the people who work on the site are the employers of various suppliers. Now, some of these suppliers prove to be quite skillful in readjusting their portfolio. So we see also successful examples of companies shifting. There are, of course, new entrants. So, for example, for electric cars, Tesla is a very famous new entrant. But at the same time, the Renault Zoe, which is the best-selling electric car in Europe, that is manufactured in the same assembly line by the same workers as the conventional Renaults. So we think that overall the employment impact associated with the energy transition is quite small by macroeconomic standards because of the capital intensity of the energy industry. Having said that, it is heavily concentrated in certain sectors and certain regions. So it has a potential to have a disproportionate political impact because of this regional and sectorial concentration. But we also think that this has to be addressed by sector-specific and regional policies to mitigate the social impacts of it.
That was Laszlo Varro, Chief Economist for the International Energy Agency. If you like this podcast, go to iTunes or your favorite podcast app and subscribe. Just search for IMF Podcasts.